Welcome in, everyone. Swim Kareem here, back with another episode of the Nonprofit Insider Podcast, episode 48. Glad to have you here. Hopefully your summer is good. It's been hot. We've been getting a lot of heat waves coming through the U.S., so hopefully you're able to stay cool, keep your finances in check. It's always crazy when this time of the summer hits because you're like, dang it, I know I'm going to spend a lot of money on electricity. Because you're going to have that AC running. You're not going to turn it off when you're in Texas, when you're in Arizona, when you're in the Midwest, St. Louis, and it gets this hot, you got to keep the AC on. So hopefully the bills aren't too crazy and hopefully you don't have to spend too much. Go back to previous episode, episode 48. That's with Meredith Whitaker. A great episode. We've been talking a lot of finance this summer. We're going to talk a little bit here in today's episode, but we've been talking a lot of finance lately. And so go ahead, listen to that. She is a expert in the nonprofit space when it comes to doing work with community foundations. She's now a fundraiser at UNC, University of North Carolina, one of the largest, most recognized public institutions out there in the university level. So go back to episode 48, listen to that. And we have episode 50 coming up next. This is going to be a good one. Listen, I've been hinting at this. I'm going to slowly start dripping some hints here. Beginning of August when it comes to episode 50. But we have a mega guest coming for episode 50. Can't believe I made it to 50 episodes. It's pretty wild. So stay tuned for that. Be sure to subscribe to the Nonprofit Insider Podcast. Be sure to like, rate, and review. Do all the things and share it with a friend. I've been asking people in the nonprofit space. They've been saying, hey, you know, you're relocating from the West Coast to the East Coast. Is there anything you want? Anything you need? And I'm like, yes, boxes, obviously. Need some boxes to pack everything. But I'm looking for reviews. And so I want reviews for the podcast. I want you to share the podcast with your nonprofit friends. It's the summer. So the views go down in the summer. But we've got some really good episodes. And we're going to keep making sure we give you some quality episodes. Because I think after episode 50, I think I'm taking a month-long break. I think I'm going to take a break the entire month of August. And I'll come back probably in September. But you never know. I might drop in on another podcast here or there. We'll see. Listen, I want to get into an episode here. I want to get into this episode because we recently had some wildfires here in the state, here in New Mexico. And I'm talking to a friend not that long ago after these wildfires hit Ruidoso. It's a part, a little south central of the state, south of Albuquerque, about 2 hours south. And I'm talking with a friend because the subject, we were talking and the subject came up of, what happens to all of the stuff that gets donated? Whether you have a tornado, whether you have a wildfire, hurricane, mass shooting. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. It doesn't matter. If you have a disaster, oftentimes what happens is the community, whether that local community, city, state, nation, depending on the size of the disaster, people want to help. And one of the things that people do, they'll donate money, of course, or they'll donate their time as volunteers. But another area is donation of goods. You have a couple of t-shirts at the house. You have some shoes. You have things you want to donate, some water bottles, Pampers, diapers, whatever. You have things you want to donate it. And as I'm talking to the friend, I'm telling her that a lot of the stuff that gets donated never really gets used. Or doesn't get used in the way you think. And I think she was surprised by my answer when it came to these wildfires that were hitting New Mexico and the stuff that was being donated. I'm telling them, like, a lot of that stuff's not going to go to the people they think it's going to go to. And not necessarily in a bad way. So I had me thinking, most people don't know. They don't know what happens after you donate it. So we're going to dedicate this episode to that. And here's the thing, there's many angles to this right off the jump. Not an expert when it comes to the goods that kind of come and go. It's just too big of a sector of society when it comes to you donate things to thrift stores, you donate things to organizations. It's too big. There's too many angles. But I want to really kind of highlight two main things. The first is I want to highlight a little bit of regular donations. I'm going to probably talk about that about 5 minutes here after the break. I'll talk about regular donations when there's no disasters, nothing's going on. I want to talk about what happens to your stuff in that instance. But I want to spend the bulk, probably about 10 minutes of what happens to the stuff you donate after a disaster. And there are many angles to it, whether you are a person, just a private citizen, you're a community group, you're a corporation, you're another nonprofit, and you're interested in maybe donating goods after disaster. There's some things around it. So we're going to talk about the stuff, what happens to it, the myths, the misconceptions, and the little known secrets to people that are in this particular space. We're going to talk about all that here after the break, and I'm going to defend an organization that gets a lot of heat their way when it comes to donations in this particular world. So we're going to talk about that here right after the break. Okay, listen, we know. You've got a lot going on. There are many, many things that are on your plate. If you're anything like me, sometimes you're like, this is a little bit overwhelmed. Everyone's asking me to do stuff. And honestly, I'm not going to be any different. I'm always looking for more people to listen to the Nonprofit Insider Podcast. So here's what I want you. I want you to do me a favor. Right now, you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Hit the share button. Just pick one friend. Just one friend. If you like what you're listening to so far, we're talking about donations and what happens after donations. If you like this episode, if you like some of our interviews, if you like our uncut series, go ahead, hit the share button. Share it with just one friend, and that's all we need. That pays it forward. You don't have to pay for podcasts. You don't have to spend any money. Just share it with a friend. Let them know that you've been listening, and we can get some more people to listen to the Nonprofit Podcast this fall. So that's all we need. All right, let's get back to the show. All right, we're back. And before we get into the disaster donation space, I'm going to talk about that here in about 5-6 minutes. I want to talk about the everyday donations that you and I do. The everyday donations that you and I do. And most people have a misplaced understanding of what happens to their donations. When you go to donate stuff, I'm in the process of moving, right? If you came to my house right now, you see storage totes, boxes, banker boxes. I'm doing all this stuff to relocate, and I've been donating some stuff, but not nearly as much. For all the things I've had, I've probably have donated only about 5% of things, because most people don't understand what happens to their things after they donated, and they oftentimes have an elevated view of the stuff that they possess. Elevated in the sense that you may not want it, but you may think other people would want it in elevated ways. And I want to defend an organization real fast. They get a lot of stuff thrown their way. And look, in the nonprofit space, I'm never going to shoot down criticism. I think all nonprofits in the nonprofit world should not feel as if they're immune to criticism from the general public. I encourage it. You need feedback. You need insights. And there's always ways to improve because society is constantly making adjustments and improving in so many different ways. But goodwill gets a lot of stones thrown their way. And what do they say? You don't throw stones if you live in a glass house. And I want to turn it on people a little bit because I'm talking with a friend of a friend over 4th of July weekend. And of course, it comes up. I work in a nonprofit space. And the friend of the friend starts talking about Goodwill. And I think it was they worked with them for a little bit. I don't think they volunteered with them. I think they worked with them at their corporate office for a little bit. And one of the things is they used to go into Goodwill themselves every now and then to buy things, especially if they travel to different cities or different states. They would go and they would try, look at some of the different Goodwills and buy some of the gears, some of the stuff. And she was talking about how the prices at Goodwill keep going up and she doesn't understand the prices of the things that they sell. And one of the things I hear over and over and over again when it comes to Goodwill or Salvation Army or any thrift store that sells stuff, when the prices are not what you want, people will often go, I can't believe they're selling these items at these prices. You got it for free. You got it for free. And folks, that's just bullshit. Everything has a cost and nothing in this world is 100% free. Everything has a price. And listen, like I said, you could criticize Goodwill in a lot of different areas, right? Like with any nonprofit. But to criticize them on a lot of the prices, I think is a little unfair. And one of the things that in everyday donations where you're moving, you have a yard sale, you don't sell some stuff, you have kids that move out, you become empty nesters, your kids get older, and you want to donate things. A lot of people may not realize that a lot of the stuff that gets donated is just straight up garbage. There's estimates from, and I'm looking here from different university research groups. Specifically, I'm looking at Seattle Times. They attributed a study by the University of, I think it was the University of Nebraska. I'm trying to find it here. That the number that there's an estimate that 60% of all the things that are donated to thrift stores across the United States are not worth anything. 60%. That's a lot. I mean, imagine donating 100,000 pounds of things and 60,000 pounds of those things are not even eligible to be sold in a proper way. A lot of that stuff gets trashed, gets incinerated, and it's a lot of junk. And listen, we've all been a part of it. I am not excluding myself from that equation, right? If you donate an old vacuum and you've had that vacuum for 10 years and you think, oh, you know what? I bought a new vacuum at Costco. I'm going to donate my old one. That's got 10 years of dirt, pet hair, all types of things that exist. And you're donating it thinking that somehow it's going to get used or sold, or that basically you use that as a dumping ground. You're like, here, Goodwill, take it. Goodwill may get 10 items from you and they may sell 4, but they may have to get rid of the other 6 or deeply discount some of that stuff just to get sold because it's junk. And one of the things with Goodwill is, of course, a nonprofit. I think they were started in 1902. They have 161 different affiliation groups across the U.S. So 161 different territory groups that do their own nonprofit tax returns and 990s and everything like that. There are estimates that between those 160 affiliates that those Goodwills spend as much as $115 million a year just on trash services. Because you donate your old vacuum, you donate your old AC/DC t-shirt with stains that you've had forever thinking that it's going to be reused, and really, they're not going to do anything. So a lot of people use Goodwill as a dumping ground. So when people say, oh, you got it for free. Yeah, okay, sure. I got this dresser for free and I'm selling it for $90. But I also had 3 other dressers that were broken, t-shirts that were garbage, and a printer from 25 years ago that you decided to donate. I can't do shit with that. So we got to be a little bit fair here when it comes to the different aspects of criticizing a lot of different organizations that exist out there that take the old stuff out your basement after your mom and your dad die, right? I think that's fair. So there's a many culprits to it. Fast fashion, labor rights, textile manufacturing. There's a lot of things that go involved in those things. But I want to switch it up to talk a little bit more about the disaster donation space. Oftentimes what happens after a disaster, hurricane, wildfire, tsunami, flooding, those are really big, mass shootings, is that there's a deep connection from people across the world or the community to help with those particular disasters. One of the most recent ones you probably saw was with the wildfires in Hawaii. As a person that lives in New Mexico, the further and further west you go, more and more people go to Hawaii as a destination to visit. If you live in South Carolina, you're more likely to go to Florida, Jamaica, maybe Mexico. But if you live in LA, Las Vegas, Seattle, a lot of people go to Hawaii. So living in New Mexico, a lot of people after the Hawaii wildfires, when I was with the other place, my last daytime job, they had a lot of people that wanted to send stuff to the island because they had a connection to the place, the family, the communities that existed out there. So people were donating all kinds of things, and a lot of it is not needed. A lot of it is junk. A lot of it is hard to transport. And a lot of it is just hard to deal with. And you often hear after disasters, a lot of people think that this is a way as a money grab, where after a disaster, an organization may say, hey, instead of donating your old kitchen table, donate $10. And people, I don't want to donate $10. You're going to use it as overhead. Well, yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe. We might, seriously. We're sending volunteers to Hawaii. We're sending volunteers to California, wherever. Yeah, we might use $5 to help with the overhead and use the other $5 for other purposes. But when you donate that kitchen table, well, what are they going to do with a kitchen table in Hawaii after a wildfire? Right? What are they going to use that kitchen table for in Texas after a major flood? It's not going to be used immediately, and it may not be used at all. And here's a little food for thought. Many people in the nonprofit space, especially in the disaster space or in the logistics of things and products and the shipment of different supplies, will say that after a disaster, there's another disaster, and usually it's all the stuff that gets donated. I was doing some research, and I saw a lot of articles dating all the way back to the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting, where after the shooting, where 20 kids lost their lives, a lot of people, as you would imagine, all over the U.S. wanted to help. And I saw some different reports out there that said that a lot of people were donating board games. A lot of people were donating clothes. A lot of people were donating bed sheets. I saw one, I think it was insider.org or insideet.org, that said that I think it was the sheriff's department. Because you got to remember, Newton, Connecticut is a small town. It's only like 27,000 people. That they had so many donations, they had to get people from local EMS, fire departments, and police stations, as well as some folks from the local USPS, the local mail service, to come in to help with all the disaster-related items, because they were getting, I saw at one point, they had 65,000 teddy bears or stuffed animals were donated to Newton, Connecticut. People were just putting them in mailboxes. People were just putting them in packages and sending it to the local city hall. They had so much stuff, they had to dedicate a large portion of the people just to handle that type of thing. A lot of people may not realize how inundating it can be to have this many items being sent to you. And here's what I want to say. A lot of that stuff, it's never going to get used. It's never going to get used. Because there's different levels to it. First, let's just say you're a private citizen. I'm going to keep it simple. Let's say you're a private citizen and you want to donate some items from your home. A lot of that stuff is not going to be immediately used, right? You're not going to use the board games, the old printer, the trash can. That stuff's not going to get used. So a lot of times, people donate those items to a disaster, and the people that are on the ground, whether it's a nonprofit or the municipality, may take those items and they may give it to another nonprofit. So you're thinking you're donating your old Monopoly board to the community, and the community just doesn't want it. And you're not going to come out here and say, oh, hey, thanks for the stuff. This is shit. Why'd you send it to us? You're going to take it, you give it to another nonprofit, maybe you sell it or something like that to another nonprofit and use the proceeds. So that's one area where you have stuff, it's just pure junk and it doesn't get used. Another layer to this, and again, no expert, but another layer to this is you donate things that actually may get used. Some of the more common things that people may donate include diapers, maybe new clothing that sometimes might get used, diapers, formula, non-perishable type goods may be used. But a lot of times they may not get used right away. Right. If you're in Las Vegas after the shooting, you may donate 50,000 pounds of diapers just because you don't want those individuals that are experiencing the grief after a mass shooting to have to worry about all different aspects of feeding their kids, putting diapers on their kids. But you may only use immediately 10,000 pounds of that stuff. The other 40,000 pounds may get put into a storage. It may get redistributed depending on the nonprofits. And that's a little known secret in the nonprofit space, right? If you're a nonprofit and you, right after the hurricane wildfires, you may use a lot of the items you already have, bottled water, non-perishable snacks, food, meals. You may use a lot of the stuff right then and there, right? And then those stuff that gets donated, you may use it to replenish. And then you may use those items that are donated for the next disaster. A lot of nonprofits don't want to come right out and say that because, listen, if you come to me and you say, hey, I want to donate these two pallets or I want to donate these two boxes of diapers, I'm not going to say, oh, thank you. When we have another disaster here in 6 months, we're going to use it. People don't want to hear that. But it's a little known secret that that's probably what's going to happen to a large degree. Because I already have, as a nonprofit, I already have a stash of all of these things. I'm going to use my stash first and then replenish it with the stuff you gave me and use it for a future disaster or next disaster. And one thing that you see a lot more than people realize is there are a lot of times where people will donate stuff and not even know, or they'll raise funds or they'll have donation drives and then they get the stuff and they don't know what to do with it. And a prime example here before we get out of here, I had, when I was with my old place, my old job, my old employer, I got a call from a friend of mine, a friend, you know, an associate in the nonprofit space. And she worked with a major credit union that operates here in New Mexico. And she calls me, she says, hey, Swim, I have, you know, for these Rio Doso wildfires, these New Mexico wildfires, I had a lot of people, we started a drive and people donated bottled waters and Gatorades and people donated pens and pencils and back to school supplies. Back to school supplies are actually a pretty big one. Those get used a lot because you can just immediately, you can hand it straight to kids, which is really great. So a lot of people, so this credit union donated all this stuff or had all this stuff donated to their local branches. And she's calling me and she's like, hey, is there a way we can give the stuff to your nonprofit? They did not have, and I'm projecting here, I don't know the inner workings of their organization, but they did not have a system to properly deal with all the things that are donated. So people are going into their local, this credit union, they're going to their local credit union branches. They're donating a case of Gatorade and some hand sanitizer, thinking it's going to go directly to that disaster. And that credit union doesn't even have a system to deal with it. They don't have a partnership with anyone. They don't deal with transportation and things like that. So they've got 20,000 pounds of stuff. They're like, can we dump it to you? Can we go to the local food bank or the other nonprofits and give you the stuff and you all deal with it? So it's not just everyday people that have this happen or donate stuff that isn't used. There are a lot of times corporations, small businesses, that happens a lot where you're a business owner, you're from, you know, let's say you're from Hawaii, but now you live in Las Vegas. And you're like, oh my gosh, you see what's happening in Hawaii. You run a roofing company. You have 100 employees. You own a roofing company, got 100 employees. And you're like, you know, you're making $800,000 a year. You have all these employees. They donate all the stuff. And you say, hey, let's give me all the stuff and we'll hire a truck or a plane and we'll send it out. And then that stuff gets sent out and it doesn't get used. So it's not just private citizens. It's corporations. It's some of the smartest businesses and NGOs that happen or that are out there that get all these things and they don't have a plan. So I'll say this. Yes, if you have it in your heart and you want to donate, yes, definitely do it. But check in first. Check with those organizations. Ask them what they need. And when in doubt, cash truly is the best. A lot of people think that people are just saying that or nonprofits are just saying that because they want your money. But it's actually true. Cash, sending a check, sending them some money is one of the best ways because your kitchen table, your 25-year-old printer, it's shit and it's just simply not going to get used. Don't donate it.